This is a recording of A Scientific Evaluation of the Zelf Revelation by Jerry D. Grover, Jr., published in Interpreter, a Journal of Latter-day Saint Faith and Scholarship, read by the author.
A Scientific Evaluation of the Zelf Revelation by Jerry D. Grover, Jr. Abstract. Members of the 1834 Zions Camp Expedition inspected a large mound along the Illinois River where a skeleton was uncovered, and Joseph Smith had a revelatory experience identifying the individual as Zelf. Recent archaeological excavations place the revelation in a chronological and ancient cultural context that now allows additional verification and interpretation of this revelatory event. In addition, with this new information, it is possible to determine whether the individual and location can be interpreted as being a part of the Book of Mormon culture and geography. On the 3rd of June, 1834, Joseph Smith and others in the Zions Camp expedition stopped at a large mound in Illinois, 1 mile south of the current Valley City along the Illinois River. In inspecting and digging into the mound, human bones and an arrowhead were encountered at a shallow depth below the surface. These remains were the catalyst for an apparent revelation by Joseph Smith of the past relating to the person whose remains were found, with the vision identifying him as Zelf. Record of the Zelf vision. Six people recounted a vision apparently received at that time by Joseph Smith regarding the individual found buried in the mound, which mound is now identified as Naples Russell Mound No. 8, Pike County. These are the only known primary sources upon which other later recountings are based. Kenneth Godfrey notes that the experience of historians and experiments of psychologists have established that precise recall of details about an event fades rapidly, so it is important to base a reconstruction of an event on primary sources, although the primary sources also suffer some inconsistencies between them. The purpose of this inquiry is not to recount all the historic particulars, but to evaluate whether the vision that Joseph Smith was indicated to have had is consistent with the known archaeological and scientific information currently available. As is typical with separate accounts of a historical event, no two accounts of what occurred and what Joseph Smith purportedly said are exactly the same, and some have contradictory details. Godfrey provides an analysis of the different historical sources for the vision and organized each account, along with their differences, into a comparative matrix. Because not all details in these narratives are relevant to evaluating the event scientifically, the discussion here focuses only on the elements that matter, following Godfrey's descriptions of each account. A summary of each account of the members of Zion's Camp, of the Zion Camp's group, is as follows in chronological order. Reuben McBride. This report is considered a primary source, as it is from his diary, and may have been the first one recorded, possibly written on the day the find occurred. Moses Martin. This report is considered a primary source, as it is from his diary. Wilford Woodruff. This report is considered a primary source, as it is from his diary. However, based on the entry, it does not appear that he was with the original party on the mound that discovered the remains of Zelf. Wilford Woodruff made later reports, but none conflicted with his original diary entries. Levi Hancock. This report is considered a primary source, as it is from his diary. However, based on the entry, he was not with the original party on the mound that discovered the remains of Zelf, but saw the bones and arrowhead that were brought back to camp. Hancock indicates that Onondagas was the king and in the mound did bury his dead, and did not dig holes as the people do now, but they brought there dirt and covered them. Heber C. Kimball. An account of the discovery of Zelf was published in 1845 in the Times and Seasons under the title Extracts from H.C. Kimball's Journal. An identical, unedited account is found in the autobiography Kimball dictated to James Sloan after the Saints arrived in the Salt Lake Valley. Although not a direct journal entry, based on the corroboration of both accounts, this would be considered equivalent to a primary source. Heber C. Kimball was also present on the mound. George A. Smith. George A. Smith was present on the mound, and in a history written in 1857, he included a very brief amount of information regarding the Zelf event. All essentially agree, or some are silent, to the following points. The individual was named Zelf. Zelf was a warrior. Zelf was a captain. Zelf was a man of God. Zelf was a prophet. Zelf was a white Lamanite. Zelf fought under Onondagas, some spelling differences. There were great battles, and Zelf was killed by an arrow in battle. Onondagas was a king, good man, leader, and prophet. Onondagas was known from the Rocky Mountains to the Atlantic Sea, or Hill Cumorah. The mound was built by ancient inhabitants of this country. Specifically, Onondagas had the mound constructed. Some differences in the various accounts may be related to attempts to align the vision with the Book of Mormon text involving periods of warfare and geography, introducing some uncertainty to the details of the vision. Four primary witnesses to the event do not indicate the nature of the death other than by arrow. Reuben McBride wrote in his journal contemporaneous to the event that Zelf was killed in battle. Heber C. Kimball records 9 years after the event that Zelf was killed in the last destruction among the Lamanites. George A. Smith, 23 years after the event, indicates it was a last struggle with the Nephites and Lamanites. Reuben Hancock's near-contemporaneous accounting of the event indicated that Joseph Smith, after returning to camp, later recounted to Sylvester Smith, a troublemaker in the camp, that this land was called the Land of Desolation. No other witnesses recounts this. Reuben McBride indicated that it was Zelf, as opposed to Onondagas, that was known from the Atlantic to the Rocky Mountains. After Joseph Smith had identified the location where digging was to take place, Kimball and the others then dug into the site of the mound, having previously sent for a shovel and a hoe. Kimball describes what was discovered. At about 1 foot deep, we discovered the skeleton of a man, almost entire, and between two of his ribs we found an Indian arrow, which had evidently been cause of his death. We took the leg and thigh bones and carried them along with us to Clay County. All four appeared sound. The vision as revelation. Not every statement or comment by Joseph Smith has been canonized as revelation. For example, Doctrine and Covenants 121, 122, and 123 are extracts from a letter Joseph Smith wrote while imprisoned in Liberty Jail. This letter was addressed to the saints in Illinois and elsewhere, as well as to Bishop Edward Partridge, and was dictated between the 20th and 25th of March, 1839. These sections were not included in the Doctrine and Covenants until 1876, when they were added by Orson Pratt under the direction of President Brigham Young. The rest of Joseph Smith's letter, from Liberty Jail, contains further words of advice and inspiration, but only excerpts have been canonized and recognized as official revelation by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Of course, others outside of the church structure likely have different points of view in regard to Joseph Smith's comments and qualifying revelatory criteria. In the case of Zelf, unlike advice or even doctrinal commentary, the evidence of witnesses is that Joseph Smith had a vision, which by its nature, if accurate and factual, requires a revelatory experience. It has not been canonized by the church, but others consider it to be a revelation, as it was recorded as such. Of course, some visions may be instructive or representative as opposed to the observation of actual events, such as Lehi's vision of the Tree of Life found in the Book of Mormon. Given the specificity of individuals and locations, and given the fact that there is essentially no doctrinal or allegorical information included, the Zelf vision is classified as a vision of actual historical persons, places, and events, and is not in the nature of an allegory, commentary, or opinion by Joseph Smith. Consistency of the vision with known archaeology. The vision has some consistencies with what is known of the Hopo culture, which is known to have existed in that area anciently from approximately 100 BC to AD 400. The Hopo interaction sphere consisted of the long-distance sharing of certain artifact styles and raw materials. The center of the Hopo tradition is found in Ohio, and items found there include fossilized shark's teeth from the Gulf Coast, EC, copper and silver from the Great Lakes region, mica from the Appalachian Mountains, and spear points made of obsidian from the Montana portion of the Yellowstone National Park. Hopewell archaeologists indicate that these big earthwork centers in Ohio were probably widely known. They were built over a period of hundreds of years and are significant structures, so people knew about them. Brett Ruby, an archaeologist at Hopewell Culture National Historic Park in Chillicothe, Ohio, indicates that some of the trade going on consisted of direct trade, meaning the traders traveled all the way to Ohio from the Atlantic, Gulf of Mexico, and the Rocky Mountains, and also likely consisted of pilgrims from distant places, coming to Ohio to visit these great religious centers and bringing objects with them. Brad Lepper, curator of archaeology at the Ohio Historical Society in Columbus, stated, "I think that during the Hopewell era in the Middle Woodland period, 100 BC to AD 400, Ohio was this nexus, this cultural center for much of eastern North America. This does allow the possibility that Onondagas, if considered a significant leader among one of the Hopewell groups, especially if present in Ohio at some point, could have been known from the Atlantic to the Rocky Mountains, as indicated in the vision, by virtue of trade or a centralized pilgrimage of people from various locations." Lamanite is a generic name, as indicated by Jacob 1:13-14, where it is used as a collective term as opposed to a tribal term. Native Americans of the Hopewell culture may thus qualify as Lamanites under Book of Mormon terminology, regardless of genetic lineage or the geography in which they are located. The Book of Mormon describes northward migrations from its core region, with some groups never heard from again. Although the Hopewell culture is not known to have originated from Mesoamerican peoples, it could have absorbed migrants from the south. If so, there may have been integration of some Lamanite persons from Mesoamerica. The vision also indicates that King Onondagas built the burial mound, or at least a significant portion of the mound, for the burial of his dead, which could either mean his family or, more broadly, for at least some of his subjects. The archaeological investigation of the Napoleon Hollow sites determined that the mortuary facilities likely served the occupants of numerous middle woodland hamlets located away from the mortuary precinct from a large area along 12 miles of the river and up into tributary valleys. So it is consistent with this portion of the vision. Analysis of issues related to Book of Mormon geography. It is noteworthy that a prophet as prominent as Onondagas and Zelph would likely have been mentioned by Mormon or Moroni if he had lived within their geographic sphere. Their silence suggests that he was not residing in the core lands described in the Book of Mormon during their era. Also, if Zelph and Onondagas existed at the time of the final battles between the Lamanites and Nephites, as some have suggested, it becomes difficult to reconcile their supposed righteousness with Mormon statements that no righteous Nephites remain except himself and Moroni. Mormon 117:3-3, 4:10-12, 5:2, Moroni 9:3-5, 18-19. Because Zelph is described as a Lamanite fighting on behalf of the Nephites under the direction of Onondagas as part of the vision, it is reasonably inferred that Onondagas was a Nephite. The church on its official website has recognized the Zelph vision as a revelatory open vision. With regard to the position of the church on the location for Book of Mormon geography being revealed, it is formally stated that the church's only position is that the events the Book of Mormon describes took place in the ancient Americas, and the church does not take a position on the specific geographic locations of Book of Mormon events in the ancient Americas. Since the church has recognized the Zelph revelation as an open vision, and considering that there is no recognized revelation from the church involving the specific location of the Book of Mormon, it is a reasonable inference that the Zelph revelation is not considered to involve Book of Mormon locations. Of course, there are other churches, organizations, and individuals that retain a belief in the Book of Mormon that are not part of the church who may see things differently. The Naples-Russell Mound 8 is part of the Napoleon Hollow Archaeological District, which consists of 26 burial mounds and two possible burial knolls, known collectively as the Russell Mound Group. In 1990, the Naples-Russell Mound No. 8 underwent an archaeological investigation. It was determined that Mound 8 was constructed atop an earthen platform supporting two ramped log tombs, presumably for processing the dead, that had been capped by an earthen saddle. Burial 1, Skeleton 1, QL-4904, was interred on the upper west side of the tumulus and was one of the last burials in the mound. QL-4904 was thus determined to represent the end use of the structure. Using radiometric dating, it was determined that QL-4904 was interred in AD 91, with calibrated range 2 sigma, AD 58 to AD 127. No intrusive burials, burials after completion of the mound, were observed by archaeologists investigating the mound. During the 1990 archaeological excavation of the mound, two areas about halfway down the hill were noted as having lunar disturbance, with either location consistent with the 1834 description of the digging. Occupation and burials in the Napoleon Hollow Archaeological District existed from 50 BC to AD 100, as determined by extensive radiometric dating. Heber C. Kimball, in a later recollection written in 1843 and published in 1845, indicated that several of the group, along with Joseph Smith, walked first to the top of the mound. Kimball states, "On the top of this mound, there was the appearance of three altars, which had been built of stone, one above another, according to the ancient order, and the ground was strewn over with human bones." Wilford Woodruff similarly indicated that they had gone to the top of the mound, and then, while descending, halfway down the mound, Joseph Smith pointed to the location that was then excavated where the Zelf skeleton was then found. The Zelf skeleton was located further down the hill, indicative of an earlier or middle time frame, circa AD 25, and so could not be a candidate to be involved in any final battle of the Nephites and Lamanites, which, according to the Book of Mormon, occurred much later in the late 4th century AD. Furthermore, around AD 91, approximately 85 in the Book of Mormon calendar, the text indicates that there were no Nephites or Lamanites, and it was a period of peace. From the time of Christ's appearance, circa AD 29 to 33, onward, the record states that there was no contention among all the people in all the land, 4 Nephi 1:13. Or according to the Book of Mormon, there were no Lamanites or Ites of any kind from AD 29 to 104, the 110th year, 4 Nephi 1:17. Sometime, apparently toward the end of the period between AD 104 and AD 188, a small part of the people left the church and took upon themselves the name Lamanite, 4 Nephi 1:20. No battle started until year 321, approximately AD 315, Mormon 1:6. Assuming that Mormon didn't ignore wars when he declared that there was peace, the warrior Zelf, who was killed in battle, and the mound he was buried in cannot be part of Book of Mormon lands. As the archaeologists determined, there were no later burials in the mound or any other mounds in the district after its completion, there is no scientific support for a later Zelf burial. Further, part of the vision indicates that Onondagas, under whom Zelf served, was the one who directed the construction of the mound, or at least a significant portion of the mound, which does not allow for Zelf to be buried long after the mound was completed. Even if Zelf died later than Onondagas, Zelf's burial could not be later than approximately 50 years after completion of the mound. Even if one uses the latest radiometric date within the date range of AD 127, the latest date for Elf would be AD 177, centuries short of the final Nephite-Lamanite battles. Thus, based on all of the various avenues of independent evidence, it is not possible that any Lamanite, let alone a warrior captain prophet named Zelf, serving a larger leader named Onondagas, could have existed in Book of Mormon lands in the archaeological time frame specified.
This has been a recording of A Scientific Evaluation of the Zelf Revelation by Jerry D. Grover, Jr., published in Interpreter, a Journal of Latter-day Saint Faith and Scholarship, Volume 69, 2026, read by the author. This audio recording is copyrighted under a Creative Commons license and may be freely distributed if it remains unchanged, the journal and its website are credited, and is for non-commercial use. A printable version of this article, along with a wide variety of additional resources, can be found at interpreterfoundation.org.